greatest phenomenon of the century thus far.
A benefit screening for KBOO Community Radio.
Everybody,
a world premiere event.
Ladies and gentlemen,
co-sponsored by Music Millennium and KBOO Radio.
Here are the Beatles.
This coming Thursday evening at 7 p.m. The eagerly awaited new film from Academy Award winner Ron Howard, his documentary 8 Days a Week, The Beatles Touring Years, will be premiering worldwide in select cities Thursday, September 15th, including here in Portland at Cinema 21.
We captured Liverpool and London, and we were out to capture the world.
This version of 8 Days a Week will include 30 minutes of restored and remastered footage from the 65 Shea Stadium concert.
It's a miracle in a way they didn't go mad.
That's this Thursday, 7 p.m. at Cinema 21, a benefit screening for KBOO Radio.
We brought that to the music.
Good morning. This is Fight the Empire. My name is Per Fogering, and my guest is Richard Wolff. He's a professor of economics at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst and visiting professor at the New School University in New York. He's written several books and numerous articles, but we're going to talk about his latest, Capitalism's Crisis Deepens. So, Richard Wolff, welcome to KBOO.
Thank you very much, Per. I'm glad to be here.
Well, why don't we just outline the crisis? It's getting deeper. What's going on?
Well, you know, we've never really escaped from the crash of 2008. Here we are 8 years later, and the Federal Reserve has lowered interest rates to virtually zero. Indeed, there are a growing number of banks that are lending money at minus interest rates, something we haven't seen for most of the history of the last several centuries, a situation in which the bank lends you money and you give the bank back less than it gave you. I mean, it's extraordinary. It's a sign, as there are so many signs, that we're not out of the woods, that this economic downturn is the second worst in the history of the capitalist economic system, only a shade better than the collapse of the 1930s, and now showing that it's lasting a very long time indeed. For example, the median income, the income that 50% of the people have more and 50% of the people have less, the median income is still several percentage points today lower than it was in 2007, the last year before the crisis hit. So what you see everywhere is an economic system that is in very deep trouble. Indeed, there are many people who believe that we're going to have another economic downturn. We usually get them every 4 to 7 years. So here it is 6 to 8 years after the last bottom of our current situation. And so we're kind of due for another downturn. And since we're already in trouble, it's a signal that there is serious breakdown of capitalism as a global system. And I'm describing the United States. If I were describing Europe, the conditions would be even worse. And that's the other advanced part of the world economy. And Japan is also in very serious trouble. Indeed, the only place that is puffing along at a reasonable growth rate is the People's Republic of China, doing better than capitalism, and it's been going on for 20 years now, which is why China has become such an important economic powerhouse in the world. I could go on and on, but the basic picture you get is that capitalism, especially in the places where it grew strong over the last few centuries, Western Europe, North America, and Japan, is now startlingly weak, stumbling. No one knows where it's going. The mass of people are still not recovered from what happened in 2008. So it's a dismal picture. There's no nice way of saying it.
Well, in your book, you talk of two explanations for these crises, and sort of, I guess, each explanation provides its so-called solution. And those are the Keynesian and the neoclassical. Can you describe those a little bit?
Sure. The neoclassical economics is the mainstream tradition. It's just a historical name that it calls itself neoclassical. The basic idea of neoclassical economics is that capitalism is the greatest, the best system the world has ever devised, and it makes everybody better off. It's an engine of prosperity and growth. And if occasionally it stumbles here or there with a depression or a recession or an inflation or any one of the other things that we know happen to capitalism, well then, the neoclassicals say it has wonderful self-healing properties. And so the best thing to do when it doesn't work real well is to do nothing, because it will fix itself. And so conservatives who like this kind of idea argue that the government should stay out of the economy, should do the minimum, if even that, let the system work, because it is just a near-perfect economics arrangement. The Keynesians think that the neoclassicals are nuts. In other words, they say this is a fantasy, that capitalism left to itself has always experienced instabilities that we call upturns, downturns, booms, busts, and all of that, and that that's a serious problem of the system. The Keynesians also say that capitalism tends to produce extreme inequality, which is a social powder keg that sooner or later blows up, and that if capitalism is going to be preserved, and the Keynesians are in favor of that, then you have to bring the government in to control, to limit, to offset what private capitalism does on its own, and that's for the sake of capitalism's survival. And if you don't bring the government in, that's the surest road to capitalism self-destructing. So they endlessly argue the neoclassicals keep the government out, the Keynesians bring the government in, and for many people, this is about as far as economic debate goes. You're for or against government intervention, et cetera, et cetera. And you can see it played out in the United States today. The conservatives don't want the government to spend money to boost the economy. The conservatives are very angry at Janet Yellen and the head of the Federal Reserve because they're pumping money into the economy and keeping interest rates low. They would rather see the government not spend money, have a balanced budget. They'd rather see the Federal Reserve not pumping money, because they have a deep commitment, almost religious, well, let me change that, a deep religious commitment to the notion that capitalism is a magical mechanism that will heal itself, and that government intervention will only muck it all up.
So the magic hand at work.
Exactly, the invisible hand of Adam Smith. And, you know, the Keynesians say to them, you're crazy. Your fundamentalism about economics risks having the whole system break up. You better let us bring the government in to keep the economy on an even keel so that we can preserve the very capitalism you claim to want to preserve, but your way of doing it is, in fact, a deep risk for the system.
Neither solution seems to be working out very well right now.
No, in fact, American history, like the history of most capitalisms, is a kind of back and forth. You know, if you look at the period from the Great Depression to around 1975, we had Keynesianism as the dominant policy in the United States. It was pursued by Republicans and Democrats alike. It was believed that the private capitalism is the system that got us into the Great Depression, and that the government stepping in, starting with Franklin Roosevelt, was the necessary solution. Then, since the 1970s, with the arrival of Ronald Reagan, etc., we basically reversed all that. The Keynesians were kicked out of their dominant positions in the U.S. government, and conservatives came in. They tried to dismantle, to deregulate, to privatize all the things they believe in, to make the economy be self-running, self-repairing, and so on. And they were convinced everything would go better. And for a while, it looked like maybe they had a point. Things got a little bit better in the 80s and 90s. But now we know, looking back, that that was really based on the debt explosion. And then we had the final step in 2008 when the deregulated, privatized economics of America, often called neoliberalism, exploded and had the crash of 2008. So we're beginning now to renew this same old, stale debate as if the only options were a little more versus a little less government intervention.
Well, we'll get to the real solution later on, but, well, I guess the austerity people are talking, they want to revive the economy runs on consumers buying stuff to keep this economy going. You know, we're being urged to spend and spend. At the same time, we're being urged to save for retirement. At the same time, we find that the interest rates, if you do save your money, it's the interest rate is very low and actually going in negative territory. So where does that leave, you know, the public?
That was a very brilliant summary you just did there, Pear. Really, if you were a student in my class, you'd get an A+ for that.
Oh, boy.
What you did was you showed very well, very clearly, the utter contradictoriness of the economic system we're in. Yes, we are told by the same conservative neoclassical economists that the economy will be booming if people spend. At the same time, we're told that we shouldn't rely on the government and Social Security to help us in our old age. We should be saving on our own. And yet the interest rates that we have in the economy are absurdly low, and so saving isn't going to solve your problem. In other words, we'll be being told to do something and not do it all at the same time, since obviously if you save a lot of money for your retirement, you're in no position to make all those consumption expenditures that they want you to do. It's even more contradictory because one of the things that hasn't gone anywhere in this country in 30 or 40 years is wages. So that to ask the mass of people to buy more when they don't have the wages to pay for it means that whether you accept it or recognize it or not, you're asking Americans to go deeper and deeper into debt, since there's no other way they can do the consumption you're asking them. And in point of fact now, they can't do that either, because they borrowed so much money in the 80s and 90s that they can't afford to carry any more debt. Let me remind everyone that the crash of 2008 begins in what was called the subprime mortgage market. That's the market in which people who can't really afford it borrowed money to buy homes, were then unable to make their monthly mortgage payments, lost the homes, the price of housing fell. That hurt working people who had saved money to buy their houses by diminishing the value of the houses. This is an economy which is asking the mass of people to do a consumption that neither their wages nor their level of indebtedness allows them to do. And that is a kind of torture. That's doing to people the kind of things that you do when you're cruel to a pet, when you ask your dog to jump up for a biscuit, and every time the dog jumps a little higher, you raise the biscuit a little higher so he just can't reach it. Anyone watching that understands it to be a kind of torture that is cruelty to animals. And telling Americans they ought to spend more money at the same time that they save more for retirement, at the same time that they shouldn't carry more debt, is a kind of torture of the same sort.
Boy, and at the same time, some of these banks, they're offering negative interest. How does that work? You put $100 in the bank and you get $99 back later on?
That's right.
That's crazy.
And well, you know how it works and why it works. Because the people who, the big businesses and the banks who know what's going on and who understand the enormous risks they face, they are now willing particularly to lend to the government, because most of the negative interest rate is in what the government pays you to borrow your money. If you lend to the government, if you're rich enough to be in that group that does that, if you lend to the government is basically saying, you give us $100, and we're going to give you back at the end of the year $99. That's a negative interest rate of 1%. Why would people do that? Because they're so afraid of any other kind of investment they could make in a business, in buying shares of stock, in starting a new enterprise. That is now so dangerous and so risky that they would rather be assured of at least getting $99 out of their $100 back than anything else they could do with that $100. So that's the kind of fragile, dangerous economic system that we're actually living in. So that when you or your listeners hear or read or see on television references to our economic recovery, that's again a kind of torture. The only recovery has been in big corporations' profits and the stock market, because the money poured into the economy by the Federal Reserve has been going into the stock market because it's not willing to take the risk of hiring people to produce stuff because Americans can't buy it. So the bottom line is that the recovery really has only affected corporations and the people who have big stock portfolios. That's not even 5% of the American people. The vast majority are in worse shape than they were 8 years ago. They either have lower wages, or if they have decent wages, their benefits have been cut, and the security of their job is much reduced. The government services they get have been cut back. Look, we have 1.5 million more kids going to public school in America than we did 8 years ago. And at the same time, we have 250,000 fewer school employees to serve them. There's no way around what we're witnessing, which is a decline in the standard of living of the vast majority of Americans. And it's really only a matter of time, and not much time, before the full recognition of that settles in on the American people, and you're going to see some very angry, bitter people who feel rightly that they've been hoodwinked, that they've been betrayed, that they've been lied to. And I think you could see already in the election activities this year that on the left, that's where the support for Bernie Sanders came from, and on the right, that's where the support of Donald Trump is coming from. And you're seeing millions and millions of Americans saying they don't believe in, they don't have confidence in the old established political and economic elite, the corporate leaders, the middle-of-the-road Republicans and Democrats that work with them, that this is a time in which Americans are being forced to look at an economic system that for most Americans is not working well at all.
Hey, this is Per Fogring, and we're speaking with Richard Wolff, author of Capitalism's Crisis Deepens. And you can get that book for a pledge to KBOO. Call 1-877-500-5266.
And keep in mind, your pledge will be doubled during this show, Fight the Empire, until 10 o'clock this morning. Now, back to Per.
Is this debt bubble going to pop sometime? I mean, if you can't pay a debt, then what happens then? How does that ripple through the economy?
Well, it ripples through a little bit like a tsunami hits the coastline when you've had a volcanic explosion in the water. We now are an economy that's more indebted than ever before. Your listeners know that. And the overwhelming majority of the people who own their home owe money on it. The overwhelming majority of people who own a car owe money on it. The overwhelming majority of people are carrying credit cards where they owe money. The majority of students going to college these days are in debt in order to pay for that, a debt that hangs over them. Americans use credit cards, which is a form of debt, to buy, a bottle of bubble water at the corner store when they're thirsty. Debt is everywhere. And if people who have built up debts can't pay for them, then there is a kind of ripple effect. And the merchant who expects to be paid at the end of the month won't be. And then that merchant can't pay the bills he has. And that means the folks who lent to him don't get their money back. And it really is like a chain reaction that takes the whole economy down. Look, that's what happened in 2008, and we have not, as a nation, taken anything like the steps to avoid that happening again.
Well, let's talk about a solution. We need something to have. What is the solution to this?
Well, I think the way I would reason it goes something like this. One root cause of the difficulties we're having has been the growing inequality of income in the United States, literally over the last 40 years since the 1970s. Every statistic put out by every private and public research outfit shows the same thing. The portion of the nation's wealth going to the top 5 to 10% is where all the growth in wealth of the last 40 years has gone. The rest of the population, 90-plus percent of the American people, have not improved their basic economic position for 40 years. Now, what that means is that all that wealth in the hands of the mass of people is money that they're not going to use to spend. There's only so many houses, cars, yachts, and everything else those wealthy people can do. You know, Bill Gates has a wealth equal to $90 billion. Not only is that obscene, but it kind of is economic nonsense because he can't and won't spend all of that. Meanwhile, since all the wealth has gone to a few people, the mass of people don't have the income or the wealth to enable them to buy goods and services. So what we see is an economic system sputtering because the capacity to produce, built up by business, has no rationale to actually produce what it's capable of because the mass of people don't have the wherewithal to buy this stuff. When you see that, you can see right away what the problem is. We've distributed income to a tiny number of people only to discover that the very wealth of that tiny number is jeopardized when you do that. It's the contradiction of how capitalism works. So what you have to do is to come up with a way to redistribute income so you put it in the hands of the people who can and will, because they need to, spend it, and thereby create the demand for goods and services and the jobs to produce them. But to appeal to capitalists to redistribute income is to appeal to the giant to not behave like a giant. That's what he is. He's a giant. Capitalists are in business to make money. Ask them. They'll tell you. The recent scandal with the EpiPen by Mylan Pharmaceuticals, where they raised the price of this allergy medicine, you know, 6, 7, 8 times what it was a few years ago. When that woman, Miss Bresch, who leads that company, was asked, how can you justify making young kids with allergy, serious life-threatening allergies, pay so much more for a medicine? You just jacked up the price. She said, I'm not here to be a charity. I'm a businesswoman. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the answer she was taught in getting her MBA at the business school. That's what those folks believe. They're in the business to make money. And so if they can get away with paying workers less, they will. If they can get away with charging workers more for what they buy, they will. And that's why the economy works the way it does. And that's why the rich get richer and everybody else has a harder time. This is the first generation of students that graduates from college with an average of $30,000 to $50,000 of debt hanging over them. So for me, the solution is simple. You've got to reorganize enterprises so they don't distribute the fruits of our labor so unequally. And I have a clear way to do it. Real quick, it's called the worker cooperative. Mm-hmm. Businesses should be run democratically. If all the workers in a business together decided how to distribute the profits, they wouldn't give one person a billion and everybody else has to borrow money to send their kids to school. What? If the workers democratically distributed what enterprises do, it would be a much more equal economy and we wouldn't have these problems.
Well, I think that sums it up really well. I wish I had more time to go into those solutions. Maybe some other time we will. Thank you very much. I've been talking to Richard Wolff, the author of Capitalism's Crisis Deepens. So thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Pear, for the invitation, and I look forward to the next time we talk.
Okay. Well, we've been talking Richard Wolff about his book, Capitalism's Crisis Deepens, and now let's talk to our friends in the Membership Central, who will tell you how you can get this book for yourself and support KBOO at the same time.
Hi, Pear. This is Conch. I'm here with Lynn, and we want to emphasize what Rock said just a few minutes ago, which is that this is a matching period. For the next 5, 6, 7 minutes, we have a one-to-one match, so every dollar that somebody gives when they call in at 877-500-KBOO is matched one-for-one by a generous donor. So when you call in to get Richard Wolff's book, and we want to thank him for being such a friend of KBOO and for joining us on Pear's show and for joining us in the past, supporting KBOO. We'd love to have you support KBOO as well. Get his book, Capitalism's Crisis Deepens, Essays on the Global Economic Meltdown, $75 pledge of support. That becomes $150 for KBOO, and you get an amazing book, retail value of $18.95, that is great for yourself. You can pass it along at the holidays to a friend or family member, 877-500-5266.
And you know, Richard Wolff is someone who's very been on KBOO a lot. He has some really interesting and explains this mess we're in very clearly. So get this book, 877-500-5266. Great. This would be a really nice gift for a right-wing relative or friend. 877-500-5266. Read it yourself. And for $75 minimum pledge, which is like, I don't know, what is that, $6.25 a month?
Yep.
Barely a couple of coffees.
And becomes $150 to KBOO.
Absolutely. Absolutely, because we have a matching now, up to $250, that's happening for Fight the Empire, Pear's Labor of Love, every couple of weeks. Richard Wolff's Labor of Love, his book, donated for our members' benefits, because you guys are the members. You are it. 877-500-5266. If you're listening to this, which is why you're hearing me right now, this is the time to do it. Don't procrastinate. Do it now. You'll feel better. Life will be better. 877-500-5266, or go to kboo.fm. And we have a really great mobile app if you're out and about that you can use. And there's a donate button. It's so clear. You guys are too smart for me to even tell you how to do that. 877-500-5266. What you give is up to you. That you give is just the most important part. That you become a member of this venerable, amazing institution, KBOO Radio. We come to you two or three times a year for money, because we are commercial free. Which, you know, I listen to commercial free radio all the time. It is painful to listen to commercial radio. So let's keep yourself out of the pain of that. 877-500-5266. You love the station. You know it. That's why you're listening. So call in now. Become a member. Be part of the mighty Boo. KBOO Radio, 877-500-5266, or kboo.fm.
Pear Fogering has been with KBOO for decades now. He has amazing relationships with authors and activists, thinkers, national figures, leaders, and...
thinkers, you say?
Thinkers, people who you don't find on commercial stations, because thinking is a problem when you need to sell things. But it's not a problem when you just need to keep the community supported and keep the community vital. And you can do that. You can thank Pear for all of his hard work in bringing people like Richard Wolff aboard. And you can also take advantage of this one-to-one matching pledge right this moment. We are coming up 10 o'clock. Chris Andre is hosting a special one-hour presentation. Her subject is Love the Ugly, Ending Food Waste. If you like ugly vegetables and fruits, well, you're going to love this show. It's guest Jordan...
because they're delicious.
Jordan Figueredo is going to be on the show. But right now, we really want you to take advantage. We've got a minute or two left in this matching period, one-to-one matching period. So go online at kboo.fm. Come in to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in person. Say hello and look at the thank you gifts that we have available. Or call toll-free 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO. And again, for a $75 minimum pledge, you can get Richard Wolff's book, Capitalism's Crisis Deepens, Essays on the Global Economic Meltdown. While most mainstream commentators view the crisis that provoked the Great Recession as having passed, these essays from Richard Wolff paint a far less rosy picture. Drawing attention to the extreme downturn in most of capitalism's old centers, the unequal growth in its new centers, and the resurgence of a global speculative bubble, Wolff, in his uniquely accessible style makes the case that the crisis should be grasped not as a passing moment, but as an evolving stage in capitalism's history. Very thoughtful
book. Late-stage capitalism, we call
yes.
it.
Yes, this is an amazing time to live in. This is a book that will give a little bit of instruction in how to move forward, and it can be yours when you call in and talk to one of our volunteers, 877-500-5266. They can take your credit card. They can do a monthly deduction from checking. They can find a great way that you can become a $5 or $10 or $20 a month sustainer of KBOO and support the most efficient media operation that you'll ever find. 877-500-KBOO.
Absolutely. Do that now. 877-500-5266. 877-500-KBOO.
All right. Thank you very much, Lynn and Conch. Good pitching there. I want to remind our listeners they're listening to KBOO Portland. Besides the Chris Andre special coming right up at 11 today, join us for Between the Covers. And host David Naiman will be interviewing Alexis Smith about Marrow Island, which is her new novel, which investigates the impact of the losses of the past. But stick around. Chris Andre is up next right here on the Boo, KBOO Portland.
KBOO would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was donated by Eclectic Kitchen at 4936 Northeast Fremont Street, serving breakfast and lunch 8 a.m. to 2 p.m.